Chapter 7. On top of everything else, this. Julia came down the hypersonic stairs in a foul mood. It was the children's speech day at school. She never missed that, and wasn't about to start now. The wind on the top of the Event Horizon Tower was cool, blowing off the land. Down below, a thick, milky mist covered the quagmire and the deep water channels, even rising high enough to claim the interlocking metro rail lines. The sun was an anemic pink nebula hovering somewhere out over the wash. Kirsten McAndrews waited for her at the side of the landing pad.
"Is Mutizen's negotiator here yet?" Julia asked her.
"Yes, he arrived on the metro right after you called to set up the meeting."
Kirsten cleared her throat delicately.
"The Welsh delegation are waiting as well.
Bloody hell! What do they do, sleep here?"
Kirsten maintained a diplomatic silence.
Julia glanced back down at the Prior's Fen Atoll, where the Mutizen Combinate's arcology lifted out of the oily mist. Updrafts around its sloping walls stirred slow-moving eddies all around the base.
Open channel to self-cause. "You three had better be right about this," she told them crisply.
"We are,"
NNCore 1 replied levelly. "The Cambridge laboratory team has been up all night assessing the data. The concept is radically different from any current technology."
Julia paused at that.
"Different or just more advanced?"
"Different. There's a whole new set of principles involved. Mutizen have come up with a real breakthrough, by the look of things. That's why we gave Peter Cavendish's message a priority one grading."
"Right, thanks."
She screwed some of the sleep out of her eyes with her knuckles. The Fens Basin was so much quieter at this time of day, passive and clean, less fraught.
"I'd forgotten how refreshing a sea dawn can be,"
she told Kirsten McAndrews as they walked into the lift. Royan had loved to sit on the beach and watch the dawn creeping up out of the Atlantic. It had taken Event Horizon's Bristol Clinic 20 months to rebuild him. They cloned his muscles, blood vessels, tendons, nerves, skin, and bones, 100 diverse glands, organs, and cell clusters, then, painstakingly, stitched the components together into entire limbs. It was a hugely expensive procedure. Not that the money meant anything to her. She had to buy the clinic an extra 30 clone vats, draft in a regiment of specialists. Their so-called Frankenstein department was already one of the most advanced in Europe, but they didn't have anything approaching the necessary capacity. None of the medical team had heard of a case where all four limbs had to be replaced. Normally amputees used Kinnaware prosthetics, but she wanted him whole again, human. She knew that was the only way he could ever hope to truly banish the past. Julia visited once a week, never shirking, closing her ears to the pitiful pleas and wails, his demands just to end it all. Royan hated the clinic. It was a constant reminder of the time he had spent hospitalized after the riot, a helpless, pain-racked dependent. At least in Muckland's Wood he had been somebody. Son. The one the Trinities depended on for information and technology, an electronic guru, vital, venerated. Now she had reduced him to a slab of meat again. When the process of grafting his new limbs began, the clinic kept him in a near-permanent state of induced somnolence. The few times she visited when he was awake, he hadn't been lucid, crying out at the pain, trapped in a looped nightmare of flames and black whips. Then, one day, more than a year after they rescued him from Muckland's, she walked into his room to find him standing, skinny, paper-white hands gripping a Zimmer frame, blue veins bulging. Pride and wonder illuminated his face. The nurses had to catch him almost straight away, but he'd wanted her to be the first to see him upright again. She had to turn quickly so he couldn't see her tears. After that, the physiotherapists went to work on him, building the muscles, teaching him coordination. Even something as simple as lifting a spoon to his mouth had to be relearned from scratch. They spent another 2 months bringing him up to full health with exercises and high-protein diets, massages and deep heat toning. All the while, Royan's complaints growing louder and crabbier. Then, when the last medical team had completed their final checks, Julia took him away from the clinic. They went to a small island she owned off Mahone Bay in Nova Scotia, her retreat from the world. She had bought it a couple of years earlier, a desolate, uninhabited place, barely 2 kilometres across. Grass had survived the warming, as it always did, but all that remained of the stunted, windswept trees were parched white branches lying on the marly soil. She got the island for a song, The hard-pressed Canadian ecological teams were still absorbed with reseeding the continental biosphere, replacing the forests and replanting the prairies. It would be decades before they got round to isolated regions like Mahone Bay. Event Horizon's botanical crew moved in to reshape the island's habitat, transforming it into the kind of pre-warming Bahamian paradise she'd seen on the channel shows. There was a simple wooden bungalow set back from a long sandy beach, the only building. The two of them walked aimlessly along the shore the afternoon they arrived, exploring the gentle bluff behind the beach. A small, dense selva forest was spreading out from the island's core, broad-leaved trees draped in pale grey and green epiphyte mosses, tied together by a filigree of vines. The company crew had hatched families of small, colourful birds to fill out the ecology. Julia laughed in delight at their antics as they swooped in and out of the branches. Royan was entranced by the profusion of flowers in a natural habitat, smelling their exotic scents, picking them and holding them up to the sun. He reminded her of a child let loose in a spring garden after a long, ice-bound winter. They ate supper on the creaking veranda and slipped off to bed as the last fragments of light drained from the day. Royan had been moulded by her subconscious desire, tall, strong, broad-shouldered, exactly how she imagined the shell of his mind to be in her fantasies, a physique to match the intellect. There was something strangely enticing about a power which could incarnate a lover exactly as envisaged, making sure neither of them would be disappointed. Royan had never argued about the rehabilitation program she'd selected. It was an anodyne to his previous state. Like her, he wanted his new self to be as far removed from the crippled husk in Mucklands as it was physically possible to get. For 3 months, they did nothing but laze in the sun and make love. Royan learned to swim. Julia learned to cook, or at least barbecue. Then she found she was pregnant with Daniela. They returned to England flush with optimism and an inflated sense of omnipotence. It was the future they laid claim to, rich, young, and data-smart, digital godlings forging their new bright empire. She often thought, later, that they were both slightly crazy, the kind of hubristic crazy that always came when the power to build dreams was granted. But they had been a unique combination. Her money, his hot-rod talent. The result was synergistic. She gave him access to ware coming out of Event Horizon's research divisions, so new the security programmers didn't even know it existed. He rewarded her with a personality package, a digital micro-entity capable of functioning within any processor core, self-contained and self-determinative, its purpose reflected in its originator's thought processes. Together they unleashed a deluge of the sprite-like composites in the global data networks, raiding the research cores of rival companies, adding to Event Horizon's technological base. Then they went for the big one, the electron compression warhead. Their super-compressed packages squirted into the Sandia National Laboratory's processor cores, established themselves within the management routines, and downloaded every file they could find. The channels called electron compression the rich man's nuke, an explosive which produced a megaton blast without the radioactive fallout of nuclear weapons. Only America, the Russian Republic, and China had mastered the technology, though there were rumours of Japan making a successful test under the Pacific. Julia built the electron compression warheads on a cyber factory ship floating in international waters and used them to knock New London into Earth orbit. The asteroid's mineral reserves, coupled with the gigaconductor royalties, gave Event Horizon a financial primacy which the combinates could never match. She gave Royan challenges he could never have conceived of back in Mucklands Wood. She gave him a love he'd never known before. She gave him the most exquisite pair of children. Then she had to stand beside him and watch him lose interest in each one of her gifts. It made her feel so small and destitute, for she had nothing else left to give. Finally, when he walked out without any explanation, she was left clinging desperately to the children in a reflex defense. They were all she had left of the good times, and her sole hope for the future. Two men were already in the office waiting for her. The first was Peter Cavendish, the director of Event Horizon's Collaborative Ventures office, a bulky 50-year-old with snow-white hair, his charcoal suit showing signs of being worn too long. Accompanying him was Nicholas Bezic, a physics professor who unfailingly managed to set Julia's nerves on edge with his combination of eagerness and timidity. Nicholas Bezic was basically a complete nerd, but one whose understanding of quantum mechanics was unsurpassed, making him tremendously important to Event Horizon. It was his research team which 5 years ago had finally produced a processor that utilized one-dimensional wire to carry single electrons. The technology had invigorated the global ware industry to a degree which hadn't been seen since the late 1980s. The amount of money licensed production of quantum wire processor chips raked in for Event Horizon was second only to that of the gigaconductor royalties. Nicholas Bezick half bowed, half flinched when Julia entered the office. She gave him a gracious smile as she sat behind her desk and turned down the window's opacity to let the wan early morning light flood the big room. There were no flowers in the vases yet. The tower's daytime maintenance crew were only just starting their shift.
"Thanks for coming in so quickly, Julia," Peter Cavendish said. "I know it was short notice, but I really do think this is important enough to warrant your personal attention." "Yes, I understand. Can you give me a summary of where we stand before Mutizen's negotiator arrives, please?"
Peter Cavendish settled into one of the high-backed chairs in front of her desk.
"Mutizen came to us yesterday with what is a pretty standard proposal. They claimed they have made a breakthrough in atomic structuring and asked if we would go into partnership with them to develop and market the technology. They offered us a look at their data under a confidentiality contract. If we decide not to join them, we can't research or sell the same technology for 5 years. Since we don't have any atomic structuring projects right now, I agreed. We were in a no-lose situation, that's what I thought."
"This atomic structuring process," she asked. "You mean they can just assemble blocks of atoms in any pattern they want?"
Nicholas Bezick rocked forwards in his chair, an eager schoolboy grin on his face.
"Yes, that's exactly it. We didn't quite comprehend the implications until after we reviewed their data. At first, we were under the assumption that it was just an improved method of our current solid-state assembly techniques. As you know, quantum wire construction is still fairly laborious, even with today's ion positioners. But it turns out that Mutizen were talking about a method of locking atoms into place with coherent emissions of gluons, the field particles of the strong nuclear force. They operate directly on the quarks which make up neutrons and protons. If it is possible to manipulate the force like this, you could literally solidify air, turn it into a block stronger than monolattice filament."
He sighed, breath hissing through his teeth.
"Ms. Evans, I'm not kidding. The potential of this thing frightens the living shit out of me. My staff have been working out applications more or less non-stop ever since they got Mutizen's data package. It can strengthen metal to make it impregnable, harden a bubble of air over a city to withstand a nuclear attack, squeeze deuterium together for fusion, manipulate weather fronts. Heck, we could probably even produce lumps of neutronium."
"Have Mutizen actually physically demonstrated it?" she asked, sharply.
"If they have, they haven't told us," Peter Cavendish said. "This was just a taster to gain our undivided attention."
"And believe me, it worked," Nicholas Bezick said. "All we've been given so far is the force's behavioural equations. No word on the method of generation."
Julia stared at Nicholas Bezick until he started to redden.
"You're the best I've got, Nicholas. Can you see how to build a nuclear force generator?"
He made a farting sound with his lips.
"No way, sorry, it's totally beyond me. In fact, gluon emission of the type they describe isn't even explainable with our current understanding of quantum chromodynamics. They must have something totally and radically new."
"But the rest of it makes sense to you," she persisted.
"Absolutely. The maths checks out perfectly. That's not difficult at all. We do know enough about quark properties to confirm their predictions."
"Interesting." Julia switched her gaze to the ceiling. Open channel to self-cause. "What do you three think?"
"Mutizen hasn't built a working nuclear force generator," her grandfather said. "It stands to reason. If they had, they wouldn't be offering you a partnership."
"Yes, but why offer me a partnership anyway?
They have a lead in a field which no one else even knew existed. Why not just keep plugging away?"
"Mutizen is a heavy industry combinate," NNCore 1 said. "Their production is geared towards cars, ships, civil engineering plant, macro-cybernetics, more or less anything mechanical, with mining and foundry divisions. Interesting that a combinate like that should have a research team working on such fundamental physics in the first place."
"I concur," NNCore 2 said.
"Me too, Juliet. The obvious conclusion is that the data isn't theirs, and they don't have the means to develop it themselves, which is why they've come running to you. No skin off their nose. You say yes and crack the generator. They're plugged into a whole new technology with a minimum outlay. Trouble is, if Event Horizon commits funds and research teams to developing the technology, and in the meantime the real owner emerges with the completed system, you're going to be out in the cold. The Giga Conductor in New London aren't going to be worth bugger all if this atomic structure in is half as good as Bezic reckons.
You mean I've got a little more bargaining power than we thought originally?
Damn right, my girl. Screw the bastards for every penny you can get.
A smile touched Julia's lips. Good old Grandpa. They weren't made like that anymore.
Yes, you're probably right. What I can certainly do is buy us a breathing space. In the meantime, I think it would be a good idea to try and track down the source of this atomic structuring concept. Assemble the most comprehensive profile of Mutizen possible. Turn over their financial backing consortiums. Review their research personnel for a likely candidate in the atomic structuring field. Someone like Bezic. The works. Then get our Economic Intelligence Division to see if any of the other combinates are building up an investment reserve. If one of them is working on atomic structuring, they're going to need some hefty production facilities when it's perfected.
My girl.
We'll initiate now, said NN-Corps 2.
Julia pondered whether to squirt a personality package into Mutizen's management corps to see what it could find, and decided to wait until the preliminary findings were complete first. She refocused on Peter Cavendish and Nicholas Bezic.
Tea, please, Kirsten. We might as well do this properly, and have Mutizen's negotiator come in now. What's his name, anyway?
Edward Muller, Peter Cavendish told her. He's one of Mutizen's vice presidents in charge of their Pryor's Fen Atoll Power Engineering Division. Top notch.
Power engineering, Julia mused. It has a certain ring to it, I suppose.
Edward Muller was a professional premier-grade executive. London suit, Italian shoes, French shirt, sado smile. He had a ginger crew cut and carefully shaded tan. Cloned clear green eyes. His age was indeterminately 40. Julia hated the sight of him. His manners would be as smooth as his clothes, his English unaccented. They might as well have sent her a cyborg. He sat in a high-back chair beside Peter Cavendish, radiating friendliness. Two young assistants stood behind him, one male, one female. Blank, courteous faces. The woman kept a slim black leather briefcase folded under her arm.
"I'll come straight to the point," Julia said as she left her big breakfast cup of tea to cool on the desk. "As you can tell from the priority I've assigned this meeting, I'm extremely interested in acquiring atomic structuring technology. Nicholas here is full of praise for its potential."
Edward Muller's eyes flicked to an embarrassed Nicholas Bezic, then back to Julia.
"We had every confidence you would be. Obviously, we are strongly in favour of an association with Event Horizon. Your size and technical ability would make you a perfect partner to help us exploit this technology. A partnership would be most rewarding for both of us."
"You are envisaging a 50-50 split?" Julia asked.
"Yes, although we would expect you to perform most of the final development stage, given that we have provided a theoretical framework for you to work from. Your solid-state research division is second to none, whereas it is no secret we lack in that direction. After that, production and marketing would be a joint effort, perhaps handled by a newly created subsidiary, with Event Horizon and Mutagen each holding 50% of the stock.
So far, all you have shown us is a sequence of interesting equations.
I shall require far more substantial data before I can even begin to make a decision."
"What sort of data were you thinking of?" Edward Muller asked.
"Your complete research findings on the practicality of a nuclear force generator."
"It is within my brief to offer you such additional data in return for a certain level of commitment visible on your side."
"Good," said Julia, "because unless we see some proof that the force generator is theoretically possible, there can be no deal.
The data we have assembled concerning the force generator does indicate that it is possible to construct one. It can be made available, providing Event Horizon deposits 200 million new sterling in a neutral account as a guarantee of confidentiality. Please understand, I do not ask this lightly, but I'm sure that by now you appreciate the implications of this technology. It is quite capable of instigating a profound revolution in the pattern of our lives. Its defense applications alone would bring in a revenue far in excess of Event Horizon's annual turnover."
"Oh, yeah," Julia drawled. "I'm aware of the implications. So aware, I'm surprised you're prepared to share atomic structuring with anyone." Edward Muller was good, she had to admit that. His face could have been machine-milled steel for all the expression he showed.
"As I said, we have the theorists. You have the facilities. Strengths and weaknesses corresponding. The basis of all mutually profitable ventures."
Julia sipped her tea. She'd been expecting Edward Muller to spring something like the deposit.
The standard business tactic. Mutizen would want to know exactly how keen she was to acquire the atomic structuring technology.
"I will give you an answer in 2 days," Julia said.
Eduard Müller inclined his head, the first hint of emotion he had betrayed.
"Of course.
Providing you do not make a similar offer to anyone else during that time. You will thumbprint an agreement to that effect before you leave."
"Ah."
He offered a reluctant smile. "It will give my assessment team time to draw up a full report based on the data they already have. That's reasonable, surely. 2 days isn't going to make any difference to a project of this undertaking.
Besides, it will take that long for you and Peter to thrash out the confidentiality clauses. Even I don't put 200 million on the line without reading the small print first." "Very well, Ms. Evans. I think Mutizen can agree to that."
"Odd," Peter Cavendish said after Eduard Müller and his two assistants had left.
"Yes," Julia agreed. "They produce a few gigabytes of data, and we embark on an open-ended research project for them."
There was something else. The way Eduard Müller had been wanting a decision straight away. Even if he had wanted it, he shouldn't have shown her that he did. Either he wanted her to know, which made even less sense, or he was under a great deal of stress. Whatever the answer, she had more cards to play with than she'd started with. She got up and walked over to the window. The mist had melted away under the first rays of the sun, exposing the chocolate mud of the quagmire. Tepid oil rainbows shivered across its surface.
"He was right about one thing, though.
I can't afford not to be involved." Peter Cavendish rose from his seat. "You think they have solved the generator problem?"
"No. At least nothing past a fundamental theory, a notion how it might be built. That's why they want to bring in Nicholas and his team."
"So what do you want me to do?"
"I'll need you to draw up 2 sets of contracts.
The worst case, where we have to agree to Mutizen's current terms. The second, I want Mutizen paying half of the development costs with us, and Event Horizon owning 51% of the marketing subsidiary stock." Peter Cavendish let out a whistle.
"Do you think you can get them to agree to that?"
Julia abandoned the view of Prizefen Atoll. If she closed her eyes, she could see hologram-coloured data streams like arched fairy bridges looping around her. She was woven into the web via her implant nodes, digesting and contributing, but never controlling. The topography of the global data net had long left human understanding behind. "The key to the modern world is retrieval," Royan had told her. "All the answers you could possibly want exist somewhere within the world's data cores." She didn't know what questions to ask. The glowing data web was contracting, smothering. Julia opened her eyes, seeing Peter Cavendish's concerned face.
"We've got 2 days to find some leverage," she said.
"In the meantime,
I've got a speech day to attend."